As you know, this podcast highlights the need to destigmatize mental health and to allow even the top sports people the space to be open with their struggles, to be human. And that's what this week's guest discusses.
This is the Thrive Podcast, the podcast which gives you the opportunity to, well, thrive.
Welcome to the Thrive Podcast, another edition of the Thrive Podcast. We've got another fantastic guest, as we do on here, because this man has set up an organization. He founded an organization called Perspectives, which is exactly to empower people in order to achieve well-being, individuals, organizations. And we're going to hear a lot more about it from a very wise man who's been involved in this for many years, and I'm sure will provide some fantastic tips, some great input to what we're trying to do for you, the audience out there, high performance athletes and sportsmen and women. He is Mr. Bernie Dine. Bernie, welcome to the Thrive Podcast. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much, and I'm delighted to be talking to you guys and also talking to people who are in the sport world, because I really do believe that sports is like any other organization, and it involves individual and group performance to be successful. So glad to be here, and hope I can shed some light on how to be your best.
Well, you've kind of preempted what I was going to ask you, because of course, mental health, mental well-being is becoming commonplace in the workplace, in society, for employers, for business. How do you think, can you go in greater depth, how you think this relates to sport and sportsmen and women?
Yeah, you know, I think it's ironic also that we're seeing more athletes speak about mental health more comfortably. I mean, let me back up and just sort of tell you the context I think in, or the lens that I look at the world in. I really do believe that mental health, I'll say behavioral, because that includes the whole gamut, really is what dictates, right? More than 50 to 60% of the game is up here. It's in your head. This are good, but if you get into your head, you're not going to do well. So that's really important. And I think organizations, whether they be association or team culture, that makes it okay and makes it normal for people to talk about how they feel emotionally as well as physically. And I think we've kind of left that off. So I think if you look at the organizations and the clubs and the sports organizations, I'm a sports nut. I watch it. I played when I was younger, many, many years ago. And the team concept is the most important thing. You know, even in individual sports, you're working with a coach. You know, you've really got to be self-aware. You've got to understand how what you do impacts the outcome. You know, and I watch football, sorry, American football. And, you know, in American football, the best teams are the teams in which there's discipline and your defenders hold their positions. They can help each other out. If they're not playing their particular zone, then, and they leave their zone, that's when there's a problem. So there's an affinity that occurs amongst players that makes it easier for them to succeed as a team. And I think what we're seeing is, unfortunately, sports have not given the kind of attention to mental health as they should be. I mean, the only good thing, one of the many good things about the pandemic was it brought mental health up to the fore. People began to talk about it. And we're hearing it from famous athletes in all sports now. They're able to start talking about it, which I think is a good thing. So I don't know if that answers your question, Keith, but for me, mental health, behavioral health really makes a huge difference in terms of the outcome, successful outcomes.
So, Bernie, I heard something very interesting. You know, I believe a lot of athletes, they think, when I start winning, when I become world champion, when I win a tournament, when my ranking goes up, that's when I'm going to feel good about myself. But you seem to be suggesting that actually, by first focusing on our physical and mental well-being, we actually increase the chances that we'll do well later on. Is that correct?
That's absolutely, you got me 100%. I think oftentimes in our world, our society, this is an international phenomenon. We think that success will bring us happiness. Actually, it is the reverse. If we feel good about ourselves and we bring ourselves to work, we bring ourselves to the field, we bring ourselves to any endeavor, that will make us feel fulfilled and allow us to perform better. So I think, and in fact, what you're alluding to, Alon, is that if you think about athletes, I mean, an athlete is an amazing specimen that makes some money in a very short period of time. My career as a business person and a trained therapist and social worker has lasted over 40 years. Very few athletes perform for 40 years, you know. And so how you bring yourself to the game while you're playing and what you do afterwards is huge. And that's why I think we see a lot of times athletes really have a hard time when their careers come to an end, because their whole sense of self-worth is tied into that performing, as opposed to their self-worth being tied into who they are and what they bring to the table. Does that answer your question, Alon?
It does, and I have a follow-up question. You mentioned the topic of self-awareness and how crucial it is both for performance and for well-being. And at the same time, I feel, especially for young people, but also athletes, they do so much to avoid self-awareness. And I feel even the trends of social media, of video gaming, these kind of habits, they're almost like running away from becoming aware of what goes on between our ears. Does that make sense? And if so, why do you think that is?
So does it make sense? I mean, what you're saying makes sense. It never makes sense to me that people not be self-aware, but you're right. You're absolutely right. I think I think what social media and technology, and please don't get me wrong, I think technology is wonderful. I think like everything else, though, the advancement of the technology is way ahead. We lag behind in the social piece to that. So what ends up happening is we talk about relationships and in Facebook friending people, right? Hmm. You're not really friends with people on Facebook. You have some kind of an acquaintance with them. And I think what ends up happening is we can't change unless we're first self-aware. We first have to admit what we're good at and what we might need work in. Think about it. You guys have been coaching or been coached. You know, the best athletes to coach are the ones that are hungry to learn, the ones that can take the criticism, obviously constructively, but the ones who look at this, they come to work every day thinking, okay, I did a lot good yesterday in that game, but what are the things I can get better in? How can I get better? I need to know that. And that's really about self-awareness. And I think you're right. Our society has made it more difficult for people to look at themselves and take responsibility for ourselves. We see that in sports. We see that in politics. We see that in relationships, that people are good at blaming everybody else and not taking accountability for themselves. And what makes change occur is it starts with self-awareness. I cannot change unless I can first be aware of who I am, what I'm good at, and what I'm not good at. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
I think it's especially true in with athletes, by the way. I think your best teams are the ones that have people who work together. I mean, I'm a baseball fan, right? So in American baseball, there was an athlete many, many years ago. Unfortunately, he's been a little tainted, but named Pete Rose. He was a star third baseman, amazing third baseman for the Cincinnati Reds. He probably had less innate ability than most other athletes. He absolutely did. The reason he hit 300 and did so well in the field every year was that he overworked and outworked everybody else. That when it came to really improving himself, he never thought, I'm going to take it. I'm just going to sort of let it go. Michael Jordan is another example of that. He was an outstanding athlete. And he would come to work before a game, hours before, and just practice shooting again and again. Some could argue he didn't really need to do that. I would argue that he never took for granted his skills and ability and need to get better. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
I've got to just jump in before I come with my next question, Bernie, because you mentioned athletes being able to take criticism from their coach. Would I be correct in saying that criticism may be the wrong word, and maybe you want to call it feedback for improvement rather than criticism, because then criticism can be taken personally, which is also delves into the aspect of mental health. That wasn't my question, although it is the first sort of question I want to ask you.
But Keith, you know what? I really appreciate your pointing that out. You're absolutely right. Feedback is important. And also how we give feedback to everybody is different. So when you're coaching, so you're right, criticism is not a good thing. Constructive feedback is really critical in improvement in anything we do. And I think the thing that I also want to highlight, so thanks for correcting me on that. The thing that I think I also want to highlight is, that's good, is that as a coach, you can't treat everybody the same. So you have to find out what works for each of your players in order to get them motivated in their mindset, right? So feedback for you, if I'm your coach, may be very different than feedback for a loan, the way I give it.
Sure.
And I have to understand that as a coach. And that's just an aside, but thanks for pointing that out. You make a very good point.
Thanks. Well, actually, my question was, we're talking about mental health, and we're talking about athletes becoming more open about it with their worries, their anxieties, etc. But you're talking about a field, excuse the pun, you're talking about sport where athletes are supposed to show an air of strength, invincibility. And if they expose their weakness, they've almost lost something in the competitive arena. So how do you expect athletes to be able to be more open on this stuff without losing what is actually very valuable in the psychological game of sport?
So that's a great question. And I wish there was an easy answer, but let me start by saying that we really need to define our terms. So being able to be open and transparent about how we might be feeling doesn't necessarily give away our skill set. Asking for help is not necessarily a weakness. In fact, it can be a great strength. And I think you're right, Keith. We've trained our world to see athletes as being invincible and they're not supposed to have faults. So I think what ends up happening, though, is that, I mean, we're all human beings. So we wake up one day and all of a sudden we're feeling depressed. And I think our mindset then is, okay, I'm weak. I can't show it. And I'm just going to get worse, right? I'm going to feed myself on it. As opposed to being able to say, hey, you know what? I'm having some trouble. I mean, Simone Biles, who was the gymnast, got a lot of grief for coming out and saying, I'm having some problems. When I do these things, I need to stop. There's too much stress on me. She had a lot of problems. She also got a lot of support for being able to do that, because what in essence she did was, by recognizing who she was, by being strong enough to say, I can't compete in this way, She was helping her team, not hurting her team. So we have to sort of change the mindset. We have to help people see that sometimes when we come to work and we're not in best physical or emotional state, we're not helping our team. We're hurting our team. Does that make any sense, Keith? I know that's absolutely. I know that goes against everything we talk about, but we create these, and we also have to remember these athletes are young people. They're young people. They're, you know, they're growing emotionally, physically. Their brains are still in development. And so when we create this aura of you got to be perfect in every way, shape, or form, we make the fall from grace a lot steeper. So I think sports psychologists, I mean, you know, it was kind of funny, but Ted Lasso was a great show. I think the media is great. It's a great show because aside from the fact that it was really fun to watch and everything, what was great about it was there were athletes there who were top-notch athletes. And, you know, they had psychological issues, just like you and I. And when they were able to sort of come together and congeal as a team, you know, they did better, right? They did better. And, you know, I think we're afraid of exposing ourselves. So the other thing to remember is how you do it is also strategic. So if I'm playing against you, Keith, I'm not going to tell you if I'm taking the ball down the field, I'm not going to say, you know, my left leg hurts today because, you know, you're going to do everything you can to make sure I go to my left, right? I'm not going to say that. But if I can share it with my team, if I know there's a safe place for me to do that, that's okay, right? Because my team then can back me up. My team can help me. They can basically move to the left so I can pass it to the left. And you don't even know that. So I think we've got to not mix up, and that's why I say definitions and terms are important, is it's not weak to be having a bad day or bad time. It's weak to not do something about it. And it doesn't help your team to withhold that. It hurts your team to withhold it. So the strength lies in being able to share that in a way that is productive for the whole organization. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. Although I would say with the situation with Simone Biles, she had the hopes of the whole nation on her shoulders. And so they were probably disappointed that she wasn't competing because they want to see the USA up the top of the medals table. That's another issue that you got to deal with.
There's added, you're absolutely right. I think the added stress of being an elite athlete or being in a team that is vying for a championship is that you get pressure from the outside. And I think, again, that's always going to be there. We can't change that. What we can do, though, is we can help support those athletes who might not be having their better days. Because I think it's the long run that we're looking for, right? And mm-hmm. Whenever you're out there doing something, look, when I have a new presentation to do, there's a lot of pressure on me not to make a mistake, right? And what I've got to walk into that presentation is I've got to be my best self. I've got to be as confident as I possibly can, but I've also got to be able to let go of that mistake if I make a mistake. Because if I dwell on that mistake, I'm only going to make more mistakes. So again, I give another story of baseball. There was a second baseman I'm blocking. Steve Sachs was his name many, many years ago. He was one of the best second basemen in baseball. And all of a sudden one day, now if you know anything about baseball, second base is the easiest throw to first base. It's the shortest throw. So ground ball to him should be an easy throw to first. All of a sudden, he started making errors. Just started. And easy plays, he'd pick the ball up and he'd overthrow it. He'd throw it to the right. He'd throw it to the left. He couldn't get out of his head, right? I think baseball had the designated hitter, so he was able to find a position. But, you know, I think that's what happens to us. We get locked into that mistake and it becomes, there was no physiological issue preventing him from making that throw to first base. It got in his head and it was hard for him to get out of his head. So again, if we can help people work through these hiccups and get support, they're going to continue to perform probably at that high level that they started to. And the world is always going to say, what can you do for me now? But we have to also understand that sometimes not being your best self on that day is not going to help the team. It's going to hurt the team. So I don't know if that, you know, it's not something I have an easy answer for. Other than we have to help athletes feel confident about themselves and okay about not having the best day all the time.
So Bernie, I know this is not an easy topic, but I want to push a bit harder on it. So what do you do specifically? You have an athlete, he's really an outstanding performer. He's had, or she's had amazing results in the past, but now she's really struggling, under pressure, keeps underperforming, is starting to feel really embarrassed and uncomfortable about it, losing confidence. What do you do?
So I'm going to say, I don't think that's any different than somebody who's been a high performer in an organization, and a lawyer, a doctor, whatever. What you do is you make it okay for them to get help. You provide them with a lot of support. And maybe you provide them with a little time off to back up. I know that's a bad thing to do with an athlete, but you give them a little time off to really get counseling. I do believe counseling helps. There's also meditation. There's a lot of different things you can do to help athletes get out of their heads, or get leaders or people out of their heads. And you help find out what it is that's triggering this negative outcome. And I think what you do is you take the time to give them that time off and get better, right? So again, I can think of many, many examples of athletes who had trouble, took some time off, got counseling, and came back. And so I think counseling is really important. I think sometimes medication is important too. I think the first thing that's important is to have that person, what we say, triaged, to sort of sit down and do a workup, just like you would do on any kind of an injury, to find out what it is that's going on for that person and what it is that you can do to help that person get better. And then to ease them back in. Sometimes it's just a simple fix. Sometimes it's not. So I think the same thing applies to athletes as applies to any high-performing employee. And that is, you do that triage, you do the counseling, and you get them back. And sometimes the counseling goes on forever. It's not come see me alone, I'm going to take care of it. Now you should be better, go back. It might go on for a while. And again, if the team or the organization, and this is something I think we had talked about before, but for me, all these solutions by themselves are not adequate. What's adequate is the culture of the organization or the team that supports, makes it safe for people to be who they are and to support each other. If that's what's going to be there, that athlete that's having problems will be able to come back into a supportive environment to the extent that they can. I mean, standing in front of a crowd of 100,000 people is always good. It's not something I've ever been lucky enough to do. And it can be very, very stressful. There's absolutely no doubt about it. But if you've got your colleagues around you, your comrades around you, it makes it a lot easier when you have that support. And when the organization from top to bottom supports you, it makes it easier. Does that answer your question, Alon?
Absolutely.
Just following
up from that. I'm a firm believer in therapy. Sure. I'm a firm believer in counseling. Sorry about that. No, I think all of us could use it and get better with it.
Yeah, and it follows on to my next question, which is, you know, as somebody who's been running your organization for many years, you will have seen that there are umpteen different psychological theories, interventions, therapies, and you even spoke about medication. I don't know where professional sport is with medication, because we do know that some of the biggest percentage of prescriptions a doctor makes in the 21st century are for antidepressants and that kind of stuff. So in your opinion, what do you think are the most effective techniques that you've seen, I guess, in this situation for sports people? And also, if you could comment on the notion of medication to some degree with sports.
Yeah, so one of the most prominent and really up-and-coming treatment modalities right now is something called CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy. And really what cognitive behavioral therapy, and I think it's a good fit, it usually works for people who are suffering from post-traumatic stress. It works for people who need some kind of short-term intervention. Because what it does is it and this is not going to sound, it's going to sound like very Big Brotherish, but it's not. What it does is it helps you to change the way you're perceiving things, the way you're looking at things, to get you out of a mindset that is negative and into a mindset that isn't. Think about your brain as having, as being a giant tape recorder, if you will, or you know, something that's recording all this information. And what ends up happening is if you get a lot of input in, it's going to create a certain mindset for the way you see yourself and the way you see your world. What cognitive behavioral therapy does is it helps you to change those messages. It helps you to reframe things, both from a language point of view and from a behavioral point of view. So cognitive is the thinking, behavioral is the behavior, and it moves people forward. So it's a good short-term intervention that gets, that really kind of intervenes. It's not the only one, but it's a good one. There are some, there, so medication with athletes is a very difficult thing because, you know, obviously there's all kinds of negative ramifications. And I will tell you that for every medication given, for whether it's psychological or physical, there's going to be some potentially, there's going to be some side effects. So that's always something that has to be considered. But I will say the worst, so anxiety medications, again, in conjunction with therapy, that's why, as I said earlier, this triage becomes so important. Because I sit down with you and I try and do a quick assessment of who you are, what you're going through, what you're bringing to the table. And then I can design a methodology, an intervention or series of interventions that fit who you are and what will work for you, right? And then we can also sort of design it for short-term or long-term. I will say, and this is one thing that I think we're starting to see more of in athletes, we also are seeing a lot of it in construction industry, is opioid abuse. And that's because athletes suffer from pain, right? And I know there's drug testing now, right? But it's not uncommon for athletes to be given a painkiller, and you get used to painkillers and they're easy to be addicted to. And if you have the kind of personality that is prone to addiction, if there's some genetic predisposition to addiction, it's going to be like much even stickier for you than for anybody else. And so when dispensing pain meds, it's really important to understand how that may be addicting people and to make sure that you get people off in the right time. So I'm sort of going in a little different direction, but I think for athletes, pain medication and managing pain is so critical to their success because their bodies are their instrument. So that's something to think about. But cognitive behavioral therapy is probably one of the best treatments available for helping people get through these short-term crises. At this point, that's changing. There's also apps, and I think that meditation is also a good thing to do. Yoga is a good thing to do because what it does is it helps to calm the mind. It helps the mind, again, to begin to think of things or look at things in a different way. Does that make sense?
Sure. Yeah. And on that, I kind of have a follow-up question. So we talked a lot about calming the mind, seeing things in a more positive perspective. At the same time, of course, as an ambitious athlete, I guess you need to have an element of perfectionism, wanting to really perform at the highest level. And that comes probably also with an element of anger, getting upset and angry when things don't go well. What is a healthy way of expressing anger?
So I will begin. That's a really good question because in and of itself, anger isn't bad. It's how we use it or what we do with it, right? So if we use anger to motivate ourselves in a positive direction, it's probably going to enhance our performance. So I think that one of the things we need to do is make sure that people have the ability to control their emotions, right? And again, you know, what you want to do to the extent that you can is you want to not remove the anger. You'll hear a lot of people saying, you know, we got to get rid of your anger because it's getting in the way. I don't think so. I think it's how do you harness that anger? How do you harness those emotions to really kind of move you forward to perform better? So I think there are people, however, who have anger management issues. They can't control their anger. They're not, those athletes are not going to necessarily be the best athletes. And in fact, they may cause all kinds of trouble. Those are the athletes who cause penalties that are unnecessary, right? You know, when somebody's, and we all have this tendency when you're driving your car and somebody cuts you off, you may say, I want to hit that guy. The difference between you and somebody who has no control is you're saying it in your head and not doing it. The person that doesn't have that control obviously is going to get in trouble. And we see that a lot in again, football is a good example, basketball too, where somebody gets fouled or loses the ball and then they go and they elbow them or they push them or, and that, you know, so really I think that, again, part of, I think, what would be great in all sports and teams is to build in this sort of psychological component to everything they do. So you have training and it's all about the physical. What about, and I know, and there are teams that are doing this, but I think the integration of the physical and the mental are much more successful. So there are teams that are doing yoga, they're doing meditation, that have sports psychologists that meet with individuals or with groups. When these kids get out of school or immediately go into sports, they're the most, I think, prone to drug abuse, to mental health problems. That's the time we want to intervene and help them plan how they're going to deal with this stuff in an effective way. So again, I don't know if that answers your question completely.
It does. I have a comment and then a follow-up question. My comment is you also have people who control anger too much, right? Like as you mentioned, suppress it completely. So it seems like it's an entire, either like a natural thing that we have or a skill that we need to learn how to really use anger in a positive way, right?
Absolutely. There's a continuum, just like with any emotion, but anger is a big one. And I think anger has a very powerful place in sports, how you use it. You want to get motivated. You want to get charged up. Anger helps you to produce the adrenaline needed to really push yourself ahead. But you don't want the adrenaline to cause you to do that negative stuff. So both ends of the continuum are just as dangerous. What we're really trying to teach people is, you know, think about the athletes who you sit there and you go, God, I wish that guy could be a little more aggressive. You know, I mean, what's going on with this guy? Every time he gets close to the ball, he backs away, right? He needs to be encouraged, or she, to really get in touch, because it's an anger issue perhaps too. They're trying to manage their anger by suppressing it. And they need to know that it's okay to let it up and use it, right? Again, it's all about teaching people how to manage those emotions, not to remove the emotions.
So that's the key. You mentioned the topic of teaching. You also mentioned the topic that at the age of being a teenager, even early 20s, our brain is still moldable. It's still shaping itself. We're learning now that the brain isn't fully developed till I think we're 25, 26.
Yep.
And during this time, maybe the most influential element to an athlete's life is their experiences within the team or part of a circuit or part of a league. And these leagues, these teams, these circuits are all now talking about mental health. But what can they really do to foster mental health at a young age, to educate players, to destigmatize the topic, to give them the tools that we're talking about?
So this is where I really feel very strongly, and I'm doing a lot of speaking to all kinds of business and business groups and associations. Normalizing mental health is really the most important thing. And I use that term because you make an outstanding point alone. There's a stigma that's been here for mental health forever. And we need to be able to say to people, it's okay to not be okay. It really is. I mean, think about it. If you have a physical injury and you play through it too much, you're going to destroy your career. So how do we teach people mentally to do the same thing? How do we, I think it begins in these teams that are house league teams, that are high school teams, that are, you know, school teams or clubs, where we should be talking immediately about how your emotions and your attitude will define how good an athlete you can be. So that by the time they get into the college or the semi-pro or the pro bowl situations, they really, it's a part of who they are. As I said earlier, I think the pandemic was good because it made it really clear to the world that in general, this is not just about sports, that in general, mental health is an important issue. I mean, we're sitting here doing this via phone, via Zoom, and, you know, there's a lack of connection that's been a result. You talked about some of the social media stuff. The negative of the social media is there's really a lack of connection and intimacy. So that has to become a regular thing. Organizations need to bake it in. So when a new team starts, when they at the beginning of the season, when they've got new rookies coming in, they should not just be doing orientations around the physical. They should be doing it around the mental health. They should be talking about, here's our EAP or here's our team psychologist. They're going to be here every you know, week. We're going to have two practices that are going to be mental health practices, right? And to be able to connect those dots, what it does is it makes it easier for people to not feel the shame and the stigma. And, you know, one thing that I think is also important is, how do you learn to tune out? Because we talk about this, right? As an athlete, you got to tune out the crowd, right? You want the crowd to motivate you, but, you know, you've got to tune them out. If you're playing to the crowd, you're not going to be as focused on the game. How do we do that? How do we help them focus on their goal and what they're doing so that it doesn't interfere with or distract from getting that goal done? So I think it is incumbent upon organizations all the way up from young to old, right, to build in, it's okay to talk about mental health. It's and to understand what happens if you don't talk about mental health. You know, I mean, you can't go to work every day, go into the locker room, take off your street clothes, put on your work, your uniform, and also put in your marital problems in the locker, or take off your, you know, forget about the fact that maybe your girlfriend or your wife is now pregnant. You just learned about that and you don't know what to do with it. Those things stay in your mind. You can't just sort of put it in the locker and walk out and do stuff. So there's got to be some safety in knowing there's somebody you could talk to get some support and some help. Does that make sense?
Yes. And on that, I think more and more studies are showing that one of the key factors that determines our well-being are our relationships. And at the same time, sport is a very self-centered arena where a lot of athletes probably think that to some degree they have to be very selfish. They have to think of themselves and their careers. And so in a way, no one really teaches them how to lead fulfilling, engaging relationships. And then, you know, when they become successful, people want to be around them, want to hang around them. Everybody wants to be part of them.
Right.
So I'm just wondering, to what extent should organizations or coaches or parents help athletes learn how to have proper, fulfilling, honest relationships?
I think to a maximum extent. And I think what you're alluding to, Alon, is, which is really important, is we can't lose sight of the fact that coaches and management in these organizations need leadership training, because coaching isn't just about teaching skills. It's about teaching relationships. It's also about watching your team and making sure you're kind of like a dad and a mom in many ways, right? Not that that's an easy role to be with an adult who's making three times as much money as you, but it's important, right? And so, you know, how do you teach leaders to be sensitive to the needs of their team and then bring them together? And I think we don't necessarily do that as well. I don't think our coaches get that kind of training. I don't think that's a part of the interviewing process. I think they look at whether or not they can relate well, but those subtleties of how well you form relationships with teams, with players, how you do that in a differential manner, like as I said earlier, I'm going to treat you different than I'm going to treat Keith, not because that's the right thing to do. It's because you each learn differently and are different people. How do we teach leaders and coaches to do that? And how do we bring in supportive staff help them, right? So that as a coach, I see Keith is having a hard time or I see Alonzo having a hard time. I'm able to say, I'm going to call this, I'm going to talk to the psychologist and develop a strategy to get to them. Because our goal is for Keith to be having a fulfilling life. Because if Keith having a life outside that's fulfilling, if he feels good about himself, he's going to feel really good about himself and perform better.
I think you've kind of answered the question I was going to ask you with regard to advice for parents and coaches. And just before we wrap up, actually, Bernie, I know that you talk a lot about mental first aid. And this is something that I've asked other guests. For example, we see it on the field of play where a player gets physically injured and they call on the physio. So can you just briefly talk about mental first aid, what a player or a sports person can do, and actually what the coach, who's possibly the person closest to them on a regular basis, or the parent, what they should look out for in the other to see, well, actually, we need to sort this.
So, yeah. So mental health first aid has been a sort of growing movement. Actually, I think if you think about first aid from a physical point of view, think about the same kind of thing being applied to mental health. It's, you know, don't think about the injury on the field where the doc comes out, right? Sports medicine person comes out. Think about what happens in you're sitting in a locker room and you see that I, as your fellow athlete, am having some trouble breathing and I pass out. Hopefully you've learned CPR, right? You've learned cardiopulmonary resuscitation. You don't need to be a doctor or a nurse to be able to administer that. All you need to do is you need to be able to ask the right questions, monitor, and maybe stabilize the person until a medical professional can come in. It's the same thing with mental health first aid. How can we teach people? Here's what mental health first aid does. It basically teaches people how to identify when somebody's having a problem. It helps them to how to have the conversation with a person, right? So, for instance, if you're afraid somebody's suicidal, is it okay to ask whether they're thinking of hurting themselves? And actually, most people are afraid to do that. But contrary to what everybody thinks, that if you ask, you'll give them the idea, actually the opposite is true. If you ask, you're giving them permission to talk about it in a non-judgmental way, they're less likely to do it because they feel like somebody cares. So that's the second thing. The third thing is, what are the resources to bring to bear? When do you need to call people in? And also, how do you help provide those resources, both professional and non-professional? So again, that's really what mental health first aid is. It's about being able to understand and identify problems, being able to have conversations that are difficult, and being able to know when to bring in professional help and monitor and make sure they're getting better. So I think that's a normal thing that we should be doing across all organizations. And I think teams or coaches with individual sports should be teaching how to do that. Does that make sense to you? Does that answer your question, Keith?
Yeah, Bernie, that was really absolutely great. And you've given us so much value. If organizations or people who are listening to this conversation want to learn more about your work or even invite you to speak at the organization or train part of the organization, where can people get in touch with you?
Yeah, so the best way to get in touch with me is on our website, www.perspectivesltd.com, or to reach me via email, which is bsd@perspectivesltd.com. And I'd be more than happy to give whatever help I can give to make this a better world for all of us.
Bernie, thanks so much. It was great having you on the Thrive podcast.
Thank you, guys, and keep up the good work. This is so needed.
Do head over to the Thrive website. That's www.thrive, spelt THR, the digit one, VE.space, where you can sign up for further giveaways and, of course, tips. That's www.thrive, spelt THR, one, VE.space. After all, this is your space to thrive.